step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. My colleague and co-host, Bill Raggio, Senior Fellow, Foundation for Defense of Democracy. And we welcome his colleague, Research Fellow Jonathan Saya at the FDD, watching Iran for us very carefully. Jonathan, we have a 28-point plan that now is a 19-point plan that's liable to change several times over these next days. The prevailing opinion in Moscow is that this is our demands, our maximalist demands. The prevailing opinion in Europe is that this is a concession to Russian aggression. There are other various opinions in between. However, I'm most interested in your expectation of how Iran will see this. We recall that early in the war, Iran suddenly showed up on the battlefield in terms of its drones, its suicide drones that were highly effective, at least in the initial stages, and transformed the war from an armor column sweeping into Kyiv into drone warfare that we have today. Iran also has contributed missiles, I believe, to the Russian arsenal. So at this point, I have no reason to believe there are Iranian soldiers on the ground, but those drones were better than soldiers, because the Ukrainians took some time to turn them away, and still they penetrate their air defenses. Your opinion of Iran's contribution to the effort in Ukraine, does Tehran see this as a win? And how does it explain it to the Iranian people, having spent their money on killer drones in Ukraine? Good evening to you.
Good evening to you. As you pointed out, similarly with the Europeans describing this as a concession, Iran is, of course, celebrating this as a win. Ultimately, their presence in Russia, whether it was through military or more detailed intelligence-related work, was a big win for them. It was that point in time where, after the embargo on them and the arms deals was lifted, they were able to go beyond just simply arming militias in the region and officially back a state, an official state, in this case Russia, to export their weaponry, demonstrate that firepower internationally, but also really send a signal to Europe. And you're right to point out that, yes, in the beginning, it was a combination of mostly drones with significant amounts of ballistic missiles. But now, increasingly, Russia is relying on these drones. And they've actually been able to develop this technology in-house. So Iran not only just supplies the drones, but actually has sent scientists. So Russia has the capacity to manufacture these within mainland Russia.
Bill, you have a question for Jonathan.
Hello, John. So do the Iranians expect, grant that perhaps there may be a ceasefire peace between Russia and Ukraine. Given the fact that the Iranians have provided Russia with significant military assistance, particularly the Shahed drones, do the Iranians expect the Russians to repay this, possibly with rebuilding their air defense systems, helping with the nuclear program? Is that what the Iranians expect in return?
Realistically, that's the best case scenario, because given that the UN sanctions that have been reimposed on Iran under snapback technically criminalize any arms deal with the Islamic Republic. So in this context, Russia now has more of a reason not to pay them back in dollars, even though there might be a possibility that certain Iranian oligarchs have close ties to Russians and they might have some back channel financial communication with each other. Ultimately, the price probably goes beyond just bribing a few officials, and the Islamic Republic as a whole would demand certain expectations. But what they do know is that Russia has usually fallen short in addressing these demands. But realistically, the only thing that Iran right now needs the most is, of course, to build up the deterrent against another potential Israeli strike, which means, of course, nuclear program. But most importantly, they need fighter jets and they need air defense systems. Now, they need to figure out amongst themselves whether they're going to solicit which equipment from whether Moscow or Beijing.
Johnson, I want to look at this from the Iranian point of view also. But are the Russians understood in Tehran to be friends of the regime or customers of the regime? Is there a red carpet laid out when Russian officers come calling or when Russian diplomats ring up the Ayatollah's office? Or is it business as usual with all the other states of Eurasia?
It is best to characterize it more so as a strategic partnership than an inherent alliance. There were some reports coming out a few years ago that Iran was actually spying on Russia, spying on their nuclear program. So there is significant distrust between them. And when previous Iranian President Raisi visited Moscow, again, Putin didn't really offer him the warmest welcomes. So when you look at the bilateral relationships between the two, it doesn't really resemble an American EU or America transatlantic alliance in any way. There's grave mistrust, especially because Russians took so long to rebuild some of the nuclear plants, one of them being, for example, Bushehr, and they never really delivered on those promises. So there's this grave mistrust. And from Tehran's point of view, they're sometimes worried about just being a pawn that Russia or Israel or Russia or America just used to negotiate over.
Bill, you have a question.
Are the Iranians better served with the U.S. being bogged down in Ukraine, committing political, diplomatic, and military aid towards that conflict? Or do you think the Iranians would prefer to see the war in Russia and Ukraine continue? Or would they like to see that conflict settle?
Ultimately, around the globe, wherever there's stability, that means there's an opportunity for the Islamic Republic to sell weapons for the most part. So whether we talk about Ethiopia, Sudan, across the Middle East, and now Russia, you see traces of Iranian weaponry everywhere. So they benefit from that. In addition to that, they also benefit from claiming that Trump was not able to fix this war and offer a diplomatic solution. So any ability they have to diplomatically message and internally message that the United States no longer is seen as the superpower that's able to mend relations. We have to keep in mind that even the rapprochement and the re-establishing of ties between Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, and Iran was actually brokered by China. And that was part of a diplomatic play by Iran to say, well, you know what? We no longer see Washington as this viable option. Diplomatically, we cannot trust them. Look at what happened with the nuclear agreements and look at what's happening in Ukraine. Trump administration is incapable inherently. So whether it's diplomatic or whether it's, I guess, if you will, pragmatic or militarily speaking, in the continuation of the war benefits Tehran's ambitions.
China, the no limits partnership between Beijing and Moscow announced very early in the conflict. China is the number one consumer of Iranian oil, I believe. There are other customers in the world, but the oil that's said to be severe sanction gets through somehow to China. China has a long-standing business relationship with Tehran. I believe there's a big contract they're still burning through over many years to provide oil. So that relationship, does it change now that the No Limits Partnership appears to have prevailed in Europe? Does Iran get closer to Beijing?
The Tehran-Beijing relationship, unfortunately, has not been impacted by different diplomatic resolutions as much as we would have hoped. The main one would have been, one, the return of the maximum pressure campaign on Tehran's economy, and two, the reimposition of UN sanctions. After both cases, we have not seen a sharp decline in Iran's exports to China. Now, some might argue that's because sanctions are in place, but they're not being enforced, which seems to be the case currently, as numbers have skyrocketed. Even under the Biden administration, the numbers were not as high as they are under Trump's supposed maximum pressure campaign. Comes down to whether really Washington wants to go after Beijing in a meaningful way. So they oftentimes sanctions teapot refineries or vessels. But the strategy that has worked, and this is something they did under the first Trump administration, was threatening Chinese banks. Meaning, if there's a Chinese bank remotely involved in this illicit oil trade, it would immediately get U.S. sanctions. So because of that, really, Beijing has not seen the repercussions of any engagement with the Islamic Republic, and they will continue to benefit from very, very cheap oil. And in return, they simply have to pay this Islamic Republic mafia that controls the illegal oil smuggling business.
Bill, you have a question.
Do you see evidence that the North Koreans are providing Iran with assistance in rebuilding its nuclear weapons program, as well as other weapons non-nuclear weapons platforms? And given that North Korea is a rogue regime, would North Korea provide a good conduit to provide the military aid to the Iranians?
We have not seen any official reports, even though there are very numerous rumors and leaks spreading on the internet. But how you characterize it, Bill, is very accurate. That when you look at Russia and when you look at China, they rather have their cronies, I guess, if you will, or like a more rogue regime to do this illicit activity with the sanctioned Islamic Republic. So the debate is, that is very likely for Tehran to access different Russian material through Belarus and access, again, maybe different, whether it's ballistic missile material or, in this case, the nuclear program through North Korea, which, again, we have to realize that Pyongyang had a very, very active role in the early stages, especially in during the 90s that was supplying Iran's both ballistic missile and nuclear programs. And there's no reason to assume that they're not going to continue that partnership. Both of them are so heavily sanctioned that at this point they don't have really, I guess, much to lose, if you will. But it begs the question, what would North Korea get in return? Realistically, probably U.S. dollars that Tehran was able to basically money launder after getting payments back from China.
We're speaking to Janatin Saya of the Foundation for Defense of Democracy, Our Eyes on Iran. We've been focusing on the immediate at-hand controversy in Europe, the 28-point plan, now a 19-point plan, headed even lower, perhaps. But when we come back, you will recall the B-2 raid of earlier this year. What is the result of that is the unclear non-negotiation about Iran's suspect nuclear weapons program. Where is that non-negotiation? Bill Raggio, my colleague and host, senior fellow FDD. I'm John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it. Your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.